CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to a fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, Inongo Lumumba Kasongo, better known as Samus, nerdcore hip-hop artist extraordinaire. How's it going?
It is going wonderfully. I'm in a great mood. You pronounced my name correctly, so I couldn't be asking for a better situation.
I have to do that because I have a feeling that you had a very similar going to elementary school experience as I did, with the idea of everyone mispronouncing your name, like subs. Like for me, the worst was having subs in
substitute teachers. Yeah.
Oh God, I can't name the amount of like just issues I had with subs and things like that. It was just the worst. I think the worst one still is mine. Was one of my subs mispronounced my last name. My last name is Viegas, so it's Spanish last name. I grew up in Michigan, so a lot of, you know, not many Mexicans are hanging around in Flint at that time in the 90s. It got more for sure, but not that time. Yeah. And definitely not in the north, as where I was in Grand Blanc. And ultimately, one of the worst pronunciations I ever had, my last name was Vile Gas.
Yep. That's not good. I mean, there's kids. I mean, kids can be cruel. You do not want to do that.
Nope, not at all. There's a lot of my childhood that I really don't talk about in public. To be honest, not in like
I
don't give a damn.
I can totally understand. I always knew when the substitute teacher was at my name because they were just super going through the list like smoothly, and then there's just a pause where she like struggles, and I would just put my hand up like, I'm here.
It's just like,
don't bother, don't even worry about
it's
it.
It's like look, I know, it's like, it's me, don't worry, it's totally cool. Right. I understand. Well, you know, just let's move on, because this is going to be that kind of
thing. Exactly.
It's funny. I know exactly. It's
nice to know someone who has to struggle. I was thinking about making a song about that at some point.
Oh, really?
This week I was thinking about it because someone butchered my name like crazy over the phone. Like, she was just making stuff up after a certain point.
I will do my best effort to pronounce a proper name. I will always do my best effort, no matter what.
I appreciate that.
And if I mess it up, I will say I'm going to try my damnedest. If I mess it up, just call me out on it. And usually, you know, like, it's funny because we're talking on the pre-show, but I'll mention here, like, MC Japan Night this past year. And I was stressing on saying some of the Japanese names proper. Like, I was repeating them over and over and over and over and over again in my head just to get the sounds right, because I didn't want to be that ass.
That's so wonderful. I'm sure they appreciated that. It's like, most people don't do that.
That's the thing. I didn't want to be that asshole that's just like, and coming up next, you know, like, and like, no, I'm not. This is an event I love.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's very apparent I love the event. But going back to the whole thing is how we kind of met. It was actually at an event during South by Southwest. I guess technically Interactive, a little bit of music. South by is a weird thing if you've never been. It sort of starts with Interactive, moves on to music, and then becomes, you know, like, whereas the marketing kind of internet crowd happens to hang out during Interactive, that switches to, like, the most douchebaggery of everything in music at times. No offense to music, just music gets...
No, not taken. I bet a lot of douchebags, so I can imagine.
Well, because what was your experience during music? Because obviously you play that, and we'll talk more about how I interviewed, but I'm curious what your experience was at South by Music this year, because I think this is your first... Was that your first year here? I know it was your first year here. Okay, that's what I thought. It's like, what was your experience like then?
At first I felt like, oh, I think I'm South by Southwesting wrong, because like, I wasn't like trying to get into like parties and do this, that, and the third. I mostly just like hung out with friends and interacted with other kind of artists who are in the same like plane as me. So people that I had seen would have come through to, I'm based out of Ithaca, New York. So artists who have come to Ithaca, New York to perform. Some people from my label were there hanging out. So I like hung out with friends and got to meet their associates and maybe like one degree of separation, but I wasn't like going out and about and trying to get into all the coolest things. Like I saw a lot of great music, but I'm not a big networky, like I'm not the person who's going to take their business card, their CD and be out in the streets like, you got to listen to me, download my mixtape.
That was what I was going to say, was like South By this year, there were a lot more people with headphones and MP3 players saying, hear my mixtape, hear my demo CD.
Yeah, wow.
And I just love how you're just like, whew, yeah, you're right. I heard a lot of that. Was that even good? I don't put you on the spot. Like, I'm saying names.
I actually at the other showcases at the showcases that I performed at, a lot of the artists that were on the bills, I was like blown away. So there was a woman MC, it was on Thursday. Her name is Psalm One, and she had like a rapper chick crew. And they were really good. Their performance was awesome. So everyone that performed at any of the events that I went to, they were all dope. But there were a lot of people, like you said, kind of out and about, like, hey, listen to me. Here's my stuff, where I actually haven't checked out any of the stuff that I was told to check out just yet. But maybe I will. I have a stack of little cards.
Here's my stack of cards from South By. A lot of them developers, you know, and people like that. people for that need to, you know, follow up for interviews and things like that. So South By for me is always the idea of Brant in the chat room, but Rose Gadawag says, yo, check out my mixtape. It's fire, fam. It's kind of like,
exactly.
Cause that's what it was. It's funny you mentioned that, because there was at least five people I walked by, and I try my best to avoid them. Like, I didn't, not because I don't want to listen to their music. It's more of, I just don't want to get pestered into listening your thing. I will listen to it, you know, if you're playing it on speakers, I'll hear it for sure. That's great. I understand, right, that there's got to be some marketing. I understand that, like that, but South By is just this giant hodgepodge of noise on film, and music is just even worse, because you got to see probably, it's a rare occurrence during South By Southwest, but you got to see what I call the atom bomb of South By, where music's coming in, mm-hmm, and it's St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People are really drunk. I was like, oh, my gosh, people are wasted right now. And then I remember, I was like, why are they wearing so much green? Oh, haha.
It's St. Patrick's Day. It is the ultimate nuke, because you have everybody who's going to come out for music already, which is already a ton of people. Yeah. And then you got St. Patrick's Day, which everyone's drinking because what's what you do. And you just have this perfect storm of like everything. I think there was like a few arrests that night, a couple of brawls, usual stuff.
I saw an arrest as we were coming, as Megaran and I were walking to get to Southwest. We saw an arrest happen. So we weren't even in like the place.
Damn. But anyways, so I should probably preface how I truly did meet Samus. I know we keep talking about South By. I did meet her at South By Southwest, specifically at this event called the Nerd Carnival. It's actually this event, surprisingly, I'm having the shirt on for.
Oh, awesome.
I still had it. But anyways, and I did an interview with her, Megaran, and Storyville. Basically, it was originally going to be just Megaran and Storyville. And then they're like, well, we have this player three here. You know, that's how we introduced her, Samus. I go, yeah, sure, bring her on, whatever. And, you know, we start talking about stuff, and I'm like, okay, she's pretty cool. Like, she's definitely a geek. Like, we talk about Castlevania and all these kind of weird Genesis stuff and, you know, all this history thing. But up until then, I hadn't really heard your music yet. And I feel kind of bad that I didn't, but I hadn't. I might have heard a collaboration with you and Raheem, and that's about it.
Probably, yeah.
But I didn't know quite what to expect. But then you get up on stage, and by stage, I put in my notes quotes for that.
Slightly in front of you, right?
Yeah, slightly over in the area where the cafe is inside, because I guess, you know, things.
Right.
And you get the mic, and you introduce yourself as, hi, I'm Samus. I write lyrics, produce my own beats, and I'm also a PhD student. And then you go on perform, and my mouth goes wide. I was like this, you know. If you're watching video, it was that kind of like, holy shit.
Oh,
what
my gosh.
The fuck is this amazing? Because it blew me away. It was this sort of thing. And we'll get more on talking about the music, but it's just, it completely blew me away. And I was like, this is, because it was this amazing kind of thing. And I know I'm gushing right now, but that was my honest opinion, was that, because I'd heard Megaran before. I knew what I was going to get into.
Yeah, of course.
I had heard Frontalot before. I knew what I was going to get into. This was the one thing that I'm never sure about. And hip hop's that kind of weird thing that can be hit and miss. You know, there are some people who have really good beats, not so strong lyrics. The people have really strong lyrics, not so great beats. And so it's hard to find the medium of that, you know, one. But two, and we'll talk, I'll talk more about this and kind of get your take on it. It's hard to find people who are making meaningful hip hop lyrics and really thinking about how that's executed. But before we get into the present, before we, you know, go into where we are now, we got to jump back a bit before, you know, to quote one of my favorite songs, before we go forward, we have to go back.
That's right.
So I got to ask, what got you into hip hop in the first place?
Let me see. That's a great question, because I didn't have like the traditional sort of, like, I wasn't a kid who had my little boombox or whatever. I think a lot of the people I talked to, like, they grew, hip hop raised them, or they listened to a lot of it. I didn't listen to really any of it as a kid. And I think that's because I grew up in upstate New York, and Ithaca is a small town. So there's not like a hip hop station on the radio. And my only interaction with it was through, you know, MTV music videos. So growing up, I listened to a lot of like Nirvana and like Weezer and, you know, all types of interesting rock bands. And I didn't get into hip hop until high school. Kanye West dropped the album College Dropout. And I had listened to some hip hop prior to that, but that album struck me because prior to that, I had felt like hip hop wasn't my thing, because I had never sort of seen like the black middle class perspective represented.
Right.
And he was the first person who I heard talking about like working at the Gap and dealing with that. And so to me, I was like, oh, I understand that. I can get into that. And I think from that moment forward, I wasn't like, oh, I need to be a rapper, but I felt like, okay, I have a place in this rap thing. And I was making beats at that time, but I finally decided to start rapping. I think when I had moved to Houston after graduating from college, and I was really depressed and I just needed to like express myself. And it was an easy thing to do. You know, you put words to beats. Yep. And you have a song. So I'm not a great singer. It felt like a good way to to sort of express myself. And then it became this much bigger thing.
Well, that's interesting that you bring up the whole that your music was more of the rock variety, because it's just it's. Usually when I talk to hip-hop artists, they'll say, like, oh, yeah, I got really into rap in the early days, like De La Soul and stuff like that. Like, they'll talk about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you're like, yeah, my opening stuff was, like, Weezer and things like that.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean,
I was totally about that.
All right. What's your favorite Weezer album, then?
The Blue Album.
I see. There
the
you go.
The first Blue Album.
Hey, I respect that. It's funny because I will still, like, I'm a weird musical person in general. Like, I got because I started, like, my musical kind of love with electronica. And then that's a huge techno guy, huge, you know, with, like, well, I always talk, like, electronica, like, Prodigy, Aphex Twins, and all the usual classic Chemical Brothers, everything like that. But somehow then I got introduced to punk music, which then was like, oh, this is, like, the rock equivalent of that, you know, with, like, Green Day, Bad Religion, and that kind of stuff. And then now my sort of leitmotif is chiptunes and nerdcore and hip-hop again. It's weird how musically that works out, because I always wonder when it comes to artists, like, how they become who they are. It sounds like. Like, what would be your inspirations? Like, if you had to say, like, that, yes, you listen to hip-hop and Kanye is what got you into it, and that's what sort of gave you that thing. Mm-hmm. Was that your only source of inspiration, or was there more to it? Were there other artists that you tend to draw from and kind of, you know, as creatives, we draw strength from other creatives.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm a hodgepodge of one person who really influenced me is Bjork. And I don't know if that comes out in my music, but I hope it comes out in my sort of like essence in terms
of
like her lack of fucks to give about anything. Like, she just is so expressive and emotive. Everything about her is so much her. And I've always wanted to be that type of artist where it's like I put something out and you can hear and feel me like through everything in the core of it. So and she makes beautiful music. So I love her. I really liked Daft Punk growing up as a kid. The first cassette that I ever bought was their first album, Homework. I annoyed my parents by playing it on car trips, and it's like,
well, it's funny. What's so funny you bring up Daft Punk? It's I remember when I first heard them, I was in Texas. I lived in Michigan, but I had a lot of cousins in Texas. And the radio was on and comes on the song called Around the World. And I'm listening
Around
to like,
the world.
Which, yeah, no, I'm a huge Daft Punk fan, so we're pretty much one on one here. And so Around the World comes on, I'm like, this is awesome. Then my cousins are like, yeah, let's change the station to something else. I go, no, what are you doing? Put this back on. Because I had not heard this before. I had not heard because I'd heard a lot of electronica before and a lot of techno in my headphones, but never on the radio. It never played on the radio. And so for me, it was just like, this is amazing. Oh, yeah, no, Daft Punk. Yeah, exactly. They were huge. I mean, they are huge now, but they were huge then. And, mm-hmm. and it was like this thing that like I could never express of like, why are you getting rid of this? Because it was so amazing for me was that. So it's funny you bring up Daft Punk as sort of that inspiration.
They're so good. And I think what influenced me about them is that they do a good job, at least in that first project of like, well, I mean, I think any artist like them, they layer their beats very richly and then they sort of take away elements. So for a producer, you can hear what they're doing and like learn, you know, what to add in, what to take away just by sitting and listening to their albums over and over again. So it's like an educational experience.
All right. Well, I got to ask then, from a producer standpoint, only because we're talking about Daft Punk and I'm cool with this deviation right now.
Yeah.
What is your take then on Random Access Memories from a producer standpoint? I mean, especially since they've essentially created their own samples with like the artists that they would end up sampling from in the past. I'm curious as to how you interpret that versus like a discovery or something like that.
I still don't even really know. Like, because to me, okay, I think discovery is probably my favorite.
Yeah. Discovery has such a great place in my heart, not just because of the album itself, but because of what would become the music video, if you will, of it.
Oh my God. The whole experience they created.
Yep.
It's like, that's nerdcore. That's like, that is, we're going to have this amazing world that we craft that goes with each of the songs.
We're going to hire the animate, you know, Toei, the animator of freaking, you know, Interstellar 666 and you know, all that stuff. Like, we're going to get that guy to then make our music video. You're absolutely right. The Discovery is an album. Like, it's one of those, you know, it's not like there's a single on there for sure, but like, it's an album and you kind of have to hear it all together, you know.
Very cohesive. It's definitely, I don't think I've ever actually, except maybe in like a party context, I've never like listened to just individual songs. Like, I sit through and listen to the whole thing as like a one experience, because it is so cohesive. Everything works together. It's like little elements of one pie. So Random Access Memories, I still don't know how I feel about it. I think it's beautiful. It's a beautiful piece of work. But it's weird to me that it's Daft Punk, and I still have to reconcile that.
I agree with you there, because I adore that album. Like, I think one of my favorite tracks on there. Oh God, I have to take a look at the track now, because it was the one where they have Gregor on there. I think it's actually called Gregor. I forgot. I'm just gonna have to look up the album, because it's one of those. I mean, I love Contact for sure as a. As a song too. I love the whole album. I'll just put it flat out. And honestly, I love it. Yeah. Because what I like about Random Access Memories is that it was such a departure from even Human After All. And it was such a departure that I was like, this is trying to do something different. And I'm always happy when someone tries to push the boundary. The name of the song that I loved was Giorgio by Morador.
Okay.
And I love that song because, I like that it sort of takes, you know, the original sort of electronica or electronic dance music, layers it, and then like near the end, like just does this sort of weird like orchestral kind of, you know, drum thing and that. And then, you know, Contact, I love as an ending song because it does the same kind of thing and then just has this just riveting kind of crazy beat. Like you're coming into the atmosphere, you know, from, you know, from the entry.
It's like powerful, emotional stuff. And they're like looping around to like disco. It's just a really interesting move.
All right. We've definitely set the bar for your musical past. We know where you came from there. But obviously, one key element of nerdcore is the nerd, is the geek.
Yes.
So we're gonna set the path. You know, and granted, you know, every artist has their different memories and different things. Mm-hmm. But what was your earliest geek memory?
My earliest geek memory,
like for example,
like my brain melting that we were able to control things in the screen. I couldn't conceptualize that. I was like, this is a thing where we watch people do things and now we're making someone do something. And I remember my dad, who's very, he's very stoic. He's like a very serious dude. And he was like giggling, like he thought it was hilarious. So that's, I think, my earliest interaction with like a console and sort of earliest kind of geek memory.
Was there anything else in terms of geekdom that got you into it? Like, were you into comic books, any television shows? I mean, because I know, you know, we'll bring it up once we get to your music, but I know that, you know, I'll just leave it like that for now because I don't want to spoil the fun.
Most of the things that I thought were cool, all of the things that I thought were cool, like trickled down to me from my older brother. So I adored Ninja Turtles. Like Ninja Turtles, you couldn't tell me anything. I absolutely love that cartoon. I remember Ninja Turtles cereal, actually, because we used to get it all the time. But, you know, of course, they no longer make it. I even looked online to see if I could find it. If anyone had, like, the old Ninja Turtles cereal, you know, box or whatever. It has such memories for me. I love Donatello because he was the smart one.
Yep.
And he was masculine enough, secured his masculinity to wear purple before, you know.
Before it was that.
Was,
it's just like funny that the idea being it's funny why I love Donatello too. You know, it was always like my reasoning for loving Donatello was more almost on a technical basis, specifically.
Oh yeah.
I love Donatello as a game. I mean, it's a game as a character for sure. Smart one, you know, science. But if you ever played the original Nintendo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, not the arcade one, but the Konami one that had a lot
the
of
Konami
just...
The Konami game, that's really hard, actually.
Yep.
It's not that game is really difficult.
It's hyper difficult.
Exceptionally difficult.
Well, because it's exceptionally difficult because, one, A, it's a hard game. B, I guess that, and this is something I've learned now about Nintendo development and how that works internally, I guess they just didn't quite know that there's like a sprite limit and a memory limit and like a whole lot of other limits on the actual Nintendo, because they just like said, fuck it, let's just throw every goddamn thing. And it's like, you can tell that's the case because shit starts to slow down and it's just like,
it's
Nintendo's
really,
like I can't
choppy.
Fucking keep up. What the fuck are you doing? You have no business throwing all this shit at me.
And no it's, business. It's not, I remember feeling like, this isn't that fun of a game. Like, it's cool, but it's really stressful. Like, for kids, it's a stressful ass game.
We'll say, I did love the soundtrack. That's usually the thing that resonated with me with video games was that. But yeah, in that game specifically, as Donatello, you can do a cheat when you, I think it's Rocksteady? Because, you know, it's Bebop you're fighting as a Rocksteady. I forget which one you fight second. But if you go in the corner and have Donatello, you can just, you know, cheap your way into beating the boss. And not take any damage. It was the lamest cheat. It was just like, this is terrible. You've already asked a question by Ash in the chat room. She goes, thoughts on current remake of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie? That being, of course, the Michael Bay implementation. Now we get to see. This is the beauty part right now because I, you know, it's already apparent. You know, not because it wasn't beforehand. It's already well apparent that yes, you're a geek. Yes, you're a nerd. Yes, you have things you love and things you cherish.
Yeah.
Now we're about to poke and prod. So
okay,
your opinion.
Thoughts on the movie make. So when I first heard about it, I like. Probably most people from my generation was outraged. I was disgusted. I was hurt. I was really angry. And I haven't seen it to this day. But I took a step back and I thought about the fact that it is important for these stories to have resonance with new audiences. We have our movies, we have our cartoons, we have our comic books.
Yep.
And if he's able to speak to this generation, like, I don't know what it's like to be 10 years old today. And so maybe the Ninja Turtles conceived of in the Michael Bay way, which I don't know what that is, meaningful to them. But I think something that's really tough for nerds and geeks, myself included, is letting go or like allowing different interpretations of things that we love or things that we attached ourselves to.
Yeah.
Which is strange because, you know, we often remake those things ourselves, but then it's like, hey, you can't touch that. That's sacred.
Well, I think Turtles aside, I mean, I'm not a big Michael Bay fan, of his movies.
Right,
there are movies, like, I did love Pain and Gain. That probably was the best Michael Bay movie I'd watched ever. And it was just a phenomenal movie. And I love the way it was directed. I love the way it was shot, the way it was acted. It's a lot of things I know Michael Bay can make a good movie. I think my issue, like for me, and I'll preface this, when the new Star Trek movie came out, I didn't necessarily hate it. But I hated that the writers had to do certain things in it. Like, they had to do this whole, we're making an alternate universe, so the original series is still cool, but here's the alternate universe we're going to exist in.
Don't worry.
Right.
Okay.
And that was the first one. And I enjoyed when they tried to do something new, because, like, oh, cool, they're trying something different. They're trying something new. Let's see what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And then comes the second one, and they say, well, fuck it. Let's just rehash Wrath of Khan, because that's
what's happened.
That's a movie that everyone loves. And, you know, and it's like, no, you had something special by doing something unique. And I was kind of curious of how you do that. And they just sort of repeat it. So ultimately, I'm with you. I want something new, but I want it sort of done it with some type of reverence, like some type of not reverence, but respect at least, and going like, okay, well, what is it that the original thing was saying? How is it we can do something new with it? I think a great example of that, even though it's a new thing, but it has a lot of retro to it, is like Wreck-It Ralph.
Exactly. You can tie in these characters and these worlds. You don't have to replicate them, and in fact, you probably shouldn't. But you can do it in a respectful, sort of tasteful way.
Exactly.
I appreciate that. I like awesomely bad movies. Like, I love Mortal Kombat the movie. I love those. Mortal Kombat the movie is one of my favorites. It's so bad that it's just so good. Street Fighter, I love that movie.
I'm gonna admit something, and I've said this before many times on the air, but I'm gonna say it again because it's too funny. I have a Blu-ray copy of Street Fighter the movie.
Now, oh my god, you're amazing.
Hold on. The reason I have it, and this is going to blow your mind, and maybe next time when you're here in Austin, I may just show it to you. We may watch it together.
Please.
We're almost there. We're not at liftoff quite yet. The reason I bought the Blu-ray is it has director's commentary.
What?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes. And it's
this is happening. There's so much to say about it.
You don't even know the half of it.
So much.
The commentary is great because, and I'll say this, I'll give a little bit of a taste. The commentary is great because about maybe 20-30 minutes into the film, he actually tells the story about how it became a film.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I'm going to tell you, if you want, I can spoil it right now, or I can hold it back, but I'll just
I'd love to know.
Okay, so he goes, so this is how it was pitched. So apparently a friend of his calls himself. This is, again, I'm paraphrasing, kind of remembering it. Calls him, says, hey, you make video games, right? And apparently this guy had made a video game, I think it was like Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, if you're curious as to what game it was. he goes, yeah, I made a game once with my kid. He goes, you play a lot of video games too? He's like, yeah, totally, I play with my kid all the time. They go, hey, listen, the Capcom execs are in town, and we're trying to convince them they want to make a Street Fighter movie. But we don't have a script. Do you think you could write a script? He goes,
in like what, 24 hours.
Quite. You joke. You joke, but it was over a weekend. I think it was.
It shows.
Yeah,
it
you joke. You joke, but it was over a goddamn weekend. And, like, he pulled an all-nighter. Either it was, you know, because it was like basically like they're in town and they had to leave like 2 days later kind of thing. So he had to bust ass on that script. And you laugh, but that was the truth.
Now I know that I need to see the director's commentary, because there's just so many things. Actually, if you go back on my Instagram, I have a post. It's from, I think, a few years ago, but I took a picture because it was on Netflix, and I was like, which one of my friends neglected to tell me that Street Fighter the movie is on Netflix? Like, I'm done with all of you people. You're horrible. Because this is my top favorite movie. And then they had Street Fighter the movie, the game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just
the 3DO.
Everything about it.
Oh, no. Yeah. Honestly, like that movie's bad. Let's just flat out, you know, not be a bare lead. It's a horrible movie. There are some interesting acting takes. Like, what I love about that film a lot is that it's very apparent that Raul Julian is, like, acting well above the movie's pay grade.
He's doing the most. And it's like the most ridiculous.
Well, because there's like a very, like, one of my favorite lines that he does, and he's talking to Chun-Li, and he goes, "The day I came into your city, you know, it was a memorable day for you, but for me, it was Tuesday." And it's just like, oh my God, this guy's an asshole. Like, he's quoting the Bible and shit. Like, he's doing some stuff.
Sonica, it's like, you couldn't make this shit up, but somebody did over a weekend, evidently. Yep. So
yeah, it was such an amazing thing, because the commentary, it's very apparent that he thought he made a good movie.
Really?
Well, because he's like saying in points and saying like that I'm taking inspiration here from Humphrey Bogart and from like
the great, really?
Yep. Like, you know, the whole, like, "You're all under arrest" is quite literally a reference to What You Think It Is, because there's a famous Humphrey Bogart movie that had that exact line. And just like, are you kidding me?
Like,
not
bro,
even trying. Like, he's talking about how he made you know, fucking whatever. I forgot what the Lance Sagat's from in terms of the game. But he made that, like, he wanted to make it look like 1950s Shangri-La, and it's like, oh god damn it, you're just fucking weird. Like, I kind of was like angry, and I showed my friend Jonathan, who's been on the show before. He was pissed. He was furious. At, like, we stopped it at the minute the commentary, you know, tells the story about how it was made, but he was just like, he was fuming, because he hates the movie. But the guy's like quoting other good movies.
Like, yeah, exactly, this is in the same tier. And so I think there's, with something like that, it goes so far to the other side that I can appreciate that. But it's a movie that's kind of in the middle where I'm like, I can't even do anything with this. Like,
no, I agree. I'm with you. I'm with you. I love me some bad movies. I do like Mortal Kombat, the film. Actually, I think it's one of the better video game movies. Actually, if I were to say one of the best, like, video game, proper video game adaptations, I would have to say probably Silent Hill is the closest.
Oh, wow.
That gets the closest, and I only say because they get a lot of the camera angles, a lot of the atmosphere right. Although it's
trying to get those elements together. The movie that I talked about the most whenever this comes up that, like, destroyed my life was the Mario Brothers movie.
Oh.
Like, that abomination. That's when I actually got pissed about. Like, now I can kind of giggle about it.
Oh god!
But at the time, I remember being like really pissed
with Luigi Mario and Mario. Of course, the actors was Hispanic actor John Leguizamo.
Leguizamo.
I know he's dead. He recently died. They played Mario. Fuck. What was his name? Someone will tell me in the chat room, and it'll hit me that. But yeah, that movie was horrible. That was I bought that on DVD for $5 just to have it. If nothing more to have it, but it's a bad movie. Because again, what's funny is that we talk about Street Fighter as being a horrible movie, but that made a shit ton of money, and that's kind of what kicked off this whole video game thing. Was that Hollywood was just got wise of, like, oh shit, there's money there. Well, let's just make everything.
Right. Everything, we can do everything.
Well, because that was also the year of the dinosaur with Jurassic Park. Like, oh, dinosaurs work out? Let's just make every dinosaur film. Like,
we got us to do dinosaurs all day.
Yeah.
I love Hollywood. I love how they think it's very easy. You can see when they're stuck on something.
It's well, like I think it's very apparent. I think I never saw it, but I know of the film, and there's a really good Red Letter Media video talking about it. It's a Whoopi Goldberg film, specifically Theodore Rex is the film's name. It was a terrible, terrible movie. All right, let's move on. Because, like I said, we've set the geek now. We've done all that. Let's move on to the present. And this is the one thing that I want to talk about, the music. I'd mentioned that I was kind of blown away. And I never really quite that, because what I loved about the music that night was it was this whole mixture of great, amazing beats and awesome lyrics. And the way that I kind of figured it out, or sort of emotionally figured it out, was that it was this raw emotion focused into like a concentrated wave beam or rainbow beam, depending on what version of Metroid you are or what version of Metroid you're playing. Because that was very apparent, you know, in the music, that it had this sort of raw emotion. It really became very apparent when you did your a cappella song.
Which was
beautiful. And it was,
you
got up on chairs and started, I mean, it's hard to explain to the audience, because it was very apparent that this a cappella piece came from this place of just you know, that was in you, and it was very genuine. Yeah. And I always appreciate that when it comes to hip hop.
Thank you so much. And yeah, that is so funny, because that piece has sort of become the staple, or the one that really most people kind of gravitate towards. And it wasn't even initially like done for one of my own projects. So someone reached out to me to do like a nerdcore mixtape and was like, hey, can you do a song for it? I was like, sure, let me talk about representation. And I ended up starting to perform the piece a little bit more, because I was going to nerdcore venues and I felt like, oh, this is, you know, this speaks to the audience here. And then I started really thinking about like, whoa, this is crazy that I'm here speaking to this audience of people about something that actually really affected me as a child. And maybe I need to kind of let them into my head a little bit more. And that's when I started to really sort of take people through the emotions of what it's like when you're playing games or watching cartoons and sort of never seeing yourself reflected.
Yeah, I mean, because it's funny, we talk about, you know, video games, about geek culture. We talk about, you know, there's always certain things that come up. You know, if we talk about the AAA space of video games, the typical lead is a, you know, white male with the, you know, grizzled beard and a deep voice and
square chin.
Yep. All the usual stuff. And even like as a Hispanic kid, it's hard to ever see a Mexican kid. Oh, yeah. You know, you rarely see yourself in that. Like even the characters I tend to relate to are more of the childlike characters, as opposed to like I'm now blanking on the guy from BioWare's game. It'll come to me eventually. It's funny how we get the things up, but it's rare that I see myself in that kind of thing. And the only time I maybe would be in an RPG when I'm able to sort of create a character. That's about it. But even then it's hard to do so. You know,
and I mean, kids really get into this, not kids, adults as well, but we like invest so much into these universes, and there has to be some psychological damage when you're investing in a universe that doesn't even imagine you, you know?
Yeah. And that was what it became just apparent, that when you started doing that, like, I mean, yes, your songs had already given that off, like there's some emotion behind the stuff, but that became this like very real, very awesome moment. And it was, you know, for me, it was just like a, wow, I had never thought about it like that without really. And it was, again, you know, when I think of musical things that I love and that I enjoy, it's things that provoke me to think, that make me kind of address something that sometimes make me a little bit uncomfortable at times. And it was
that's exactly what I'm going for. Oh my God, that's perfect. That's like literally, I seek to make people think and get emotional and a little bit uncomfortable. So you like articulated what I'm going for. That's just perfect. Thank you. Yeah, it works.
I'm just laughing just because it's just like, I'm saying exactly what I feel. And it's just like, yep, that's exactly what I was going for. Wow. I'm glad it worked.
Yeah, it's great to know that I was able to communicate that.
So I guess I should ask, especially when it comes to music production. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, that you are a producer and it comes to certain things like that. So when it comes to things first, and only because hip hop has, you know, has your two, your three core elements, I'd say. It has your beats, your production. Yeah. It has your lyrics, mm-hmm. the rhymes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But the really good ones and the ones that tend to stick with me, and I think the ones that we as the, you know, fans of the music genre talk about are the ones that have a theme, have some type of of overarching goal, you know, whether it be, you know, like Rapper's Delight is very much a staple song, but there's a reason why, even like White Lines, you know, there's a reason why it stuck around for this many years. So how do you approach, you know, when you make a song? Do you approach it from, let me make the beat first and that? Do you have a theme? Mm-hmm. Do you go lyrics?
Yeah, great question, because I'm doing that right now as I work on my next project. So traditionally what I have done is I start off with production because I started off making beats. I started off thinking that I wanted to have a video game. Like, this was when I was in high school. I said, I want to have a video game or a cartoon when I grow up, but I don't know how to animate and I don't know how to program. So I'm just going to make the music for said game or cartoon. And then when I figure out how to do all the other stuff, I'll get there. So that was my original intention behind making music, was just to be background music for whatever world I was able to create later. In the song Perfect Dark, I talk a lot about the characters that I used to draw. And that was to that end, in the hopes of eventually having that world that I could create. And so to me, production is like my heart. That's where I started off. That's how I really started to fall in love with music. And even now, the artist that I listen to, it's like the beat. What's the beat like? What does the production sound like? And then once I have the production, the next thing to me is I think about like thematically what I want to do. Because it's super fun to do wordplay, to just kind of make cool raps or whatever. But I think for the purposes of like an album, I think about, okay, what do I want to tackle? What has happened to me over the past year? What issue has really pissed me off, or what thing has made me really happy that I want to like address in one song? And then I kind of go about putting the lyrics together over the beat.
That makes sense, because it's like, again, it's very... Like, you know, we take some of your nerdcore stuff, like your, is it not, it's Other M, I think, or which is
Another M.
Another M. Right. Cause there's two Metroid, there's the Metroid album, and then there's the more,
kind of like life.
Yeah.
Issues.
Life issues. I don't know. It's hard to explain albums in that. But in your Metroid album, it's very apparent. I mean, yes, you're speaking from the character of Samus as best you can through your own sort of voice and your own vernacular. But it's very apparent, like in the opening song, how you're talking about, you know, an issue that they rarely address in Metroid, the fact that here's a girl that was mm-hmm. sort of abandoned and raised by an entirely different race. And now is a bounty hunter hunting down things that, like, they rarely talk about. That's rarely an issue that ever comes up when we talk about the Samus Aran storyline.
Who she is as a person, or what her experience has been, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, for me, it was just this amazing thing, and I couldn't process it until it was all done. I couldn't. It was hard. I mean, because like, it's funny, because the next day I would, you know, it was a Sunday for me, so South by kind of going to the concert thing. I would end up going to another event that I was kind of nervous to be at, not because I wasn't anything nervous, just like I'm as much as I talk now, as much as I'm able to host a podcast and have this conversation with you and do all the things I'm doing, I'm still kind of a nerd and still have a little bit of awkwardness to me.
Well, I understand. Me too.
You know, and so for me, it's always tricky sometimes going, not out in the public per se, but among, as I jokingly call them, normies. I don't mean that honestly. I say muggles or whatever you want to say. People, you know, because I can have a great conversation with someone who's like-minded. I can have a great conversation at a convention, or I'm in a nerdcore concert, because I know everybody here is pretty much here for that. Like, I don't know who the guy was, but the taller man next to me, he was filming stuff, and I think you knew him.
My manager and my homie.
Okay, yeah. And it was very apparent that, like, you know, like after the concert was done, we start talking about things, and he's like, he goes, we talk about Final Fantasy, and he's like, yeah, I always throw out 6 as my favorite, because I love 6, and Final Fantasy 6 is my favorite Final Fantasy. And he goes, you know, I think 5 is underrated. He goes, you know, you're absolutely right, 5 is underrated. Honestly, though, my favorite JRPG is Earthbound. And he's like, oh shit, fuck yeah, like Ness and everything. Like, it was this awesome connection of just like very much like, You know, I didn't feel, you know, I never feel awkward at nerdcore shows because I know that's going to happen. I know there's going to, I can have that kind of thing. But you put me in a general populace, I'm like, oh, well, I don't know anybody here, you know? And so to get centered that day to kind of that, because I had bought both albums that day. I had actually bought it again on Bandcamp because I wanted to have it on my collection on Bandcamp. So I bought it twice. Mind you,
I know you're a super supporter. Thank you so much.
Well, because it was honestly, as much as I want to say I want it part of my Bandcamp collection, yes, I did, but it was a little out of laziness because, like, I just don't want to rip this right now. I'll buy it again.
Here's $10.
It was worth my time. I just did not want to rip it again. And I have the Bandcamp app, so I could listen to it right away. So it wasn't a big. It was more of like, this is convenient. And so I heard it, and like kind of my way of getting centered was specifically the song "Mae Jemison." Like that, for some reason, was like my centering song that day.
Yes.
Well, because it's a beautiful song. I mean, it's the opening of it, but it's a very like. It's very apparent, yes, you're rapping from Samus's point of view, and yes, you're saying the lyrics from Samus's point of view, for sure, but it's very apparent there's a lot of you in that.
There's so much of me. The perspective is like, and I think that was what was so fun, but also daunting about that project in particular. I think we talked about this earlier, that people are very attached to their fandoms for good reason, so I was very anxious and hesitant to like really take on, and that's why my first project wasn't like a Metroid tribute thing, why I waited two projects in, because I didn't even feel like I could approach something as big as Metroid, as you know, as much as it's meant to so many people. And I was terrified that I would be found by like the underbelly of the internet and just dragged and, you know, destroyed.
Just tarred and feathered or quartered and, you know. Torn and quartered.
Exactly. All of that horrible stuff that happens when people don't like things online. And so I was like, how much of this should be Samus and how much of this should be me? But I was like, I can never know what would be Samus. So I have to just be me as Samus, thinking about what it would be like to be this lady who lost her family, who's kind of in space, and what emotionally is she going through when she's on her mission. What is she really dealing with and interacting with? And I think that part of it was super duper fun, but I was very scared that people would be like, this is not Samus. This is Samus 2Ms just talking shit.
Well, it's because like the trick with Samus, I mean, as a character, and now all we're getting into this because we're talking about it, is, I mean, the planet Zebus is a very, very, very harsh environment.
Yes.
Very harsh. I mean, you have... Yeah. You know, your only protection against the elements as this character is the suit that you have on. And you, you damn better hope that holds up. Because if it doesn't, you're screwed and you're dead. And it's very, you know, it's, you know, yes, the NES one's a little bit more lighthearted in terms of how you die. But you take the Super Metroid one and the suit explodes and that kind of thing.
It's very intense.
It's very then. You know, and so you have... this harsh environment that, you know, very harsh, you know, with unknown life forms and things that are just trying to kill you. And you've been tasked with the mission to eradicate all these Metroids and destroy the, you know, Mother Brain and any other space pirates you happen to see. And if you take that as a game, it's like, oh, fun, hooray, yay, exploration, Metroidvania and all that stuff. But if you take it as a thematic, I mean, it's not forgiving. Yeah.
Very intense. And that's actually one thing that drew me to Metroid. Anyone who knows me knows that I don't like happy endings. I like ambiguity. I like things that are uncomfortable. I like things that are heavy and that are dark in terms of, you know, music, in terms of films, whatever. And so I remember just even as a kid feeling like, this game is different. Like Metroid is different. It's just, it's dark. And especially in comparison to its like peers, like when you think about like the Marios of the world, like this game, even the soundtrack is kind of eerie, the sound effects, everything about it is really just in sort of a class of its own. So I think you're right in that as a game, you can be like, okay, well, I'm doing X, Y, Z, but really taking seriously what's happening, you think about how fucking insane and scary this whole experience would be.
Yeah, no, and that's one of the things that's always attracted me. Of course, if you're watching live right now, you can feel free to ask some questions. You know, we're almost at the end of the show proper, but I'd love to hear anything from the audience. Of course, just hit me up there in the chat room. Just add Vincent404 there in the question for Samus, because ultimately, I have said my piece. I think I've said everything I've wanted to ask about you and ask and such. And I guess there's one last question I have. One final question. Yeah. Only because, again, we introduced you as, you know, the way you introduced yourself was that, hi, I'm Samus. I produce, mm-hmm. I make lyrics, and I'm a PhD student.
Yes.
How do you keep that all in check? Because I know that a PhD isn't something you take on lightly. I have many friends who are going into that. How do you handle that? You know, before we go into user questions, how do you keep that all in check?
Yeah. It's been, I'm kind of a hot mess. to be perfectly honest, I'm kind of a hot mess. I feel like I've prioritized as much as I can, but there have been some days, for example, like part of my responsibility as a PhD student is to teach classes. There have been times when I've just sort of been like freestyle teaching, just like doing what I can because I had stayed up the night before making music. Or I'll get to a venue and I'm just completely exhausted because I had class earlier that day or something like that. So I am like kind of barely keeping it together, but I have been blessed to have a very forgiving advisor who's actually very interested in music as well. He actually has done some research on Robert Moog, the inventor of the Moog synthesizer. Yep. And so we have this common connection where we really appreciate music. And so he has been very supportive of my music career and has allowed me to have some flexibility there. Even I work as a residence hall director, our assistant residence hall director in my other day job. And my supervisor there was very forgiving super in terms of like, I told him I'm going on tour and he was like, okay, cool. You know, have fun. Let me know how it goes. So I just have been blessed to have very flexible people. But I also use every spare minute to do something for something. So whether it's sending an email on the go or making a beat while I'm sitting in the airport, it's like every minute has to count because I just don't have the time to spare.
That is the kind of attitude I'd love to hear. I'm glad to hear that. All right, we have some questions from the audience. Question one from Mech. He asks, do you like Gattaca and Lost in Translation? Or Gattaca, of course, go for it.
Oh, sorry. No, go for it.
I was say Gattaca is an old science fiction film and Lost in Translation, Bill Murray movie.
Yes. So Gattaca, I actually have a reference to it in one of my songs. If you listen to Reset, you will hear it. I'll just leave it at that. So I definitely appreciate that movie and actually saw it through when I went to undergrad here. I majored in my current PhD field and I saw it through a professor in that department. So it's very cool. Has a lot of themes that I like to think about. And Lost in Translation, I've only seen it once, and I remember thinking it was interesting, but I didn't go back and investigate. So I'm sorry if that's unsatisfactory, but I thought I.
Well, that's because you need to watch it with more intensity.
Sorry. Okay, I'll go back. I'll watch it in that exact way.
It's all right. Next question.
Sorry, good.
Next question from the chat room. Ash asks, wasn't sure if you mentioned already, but what is Samus PhDing in? What are you getting your PhD in? And you told me during the pre-show, but let's tease the audience.
I am in the Science and Technology Studies Department at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. And for those who don't know what Science and Technology Studies is, and don't worry, it's okay if you don't, because it's kind of an obscure field. It's an interesting sort of field that combines perspectives of sociology, anthropology, and history. And we use those fields to think about questions related to how like scientific knowledge or how knowledge or understanding of technology comes to be. So for example, some people observe like engineering culture. And so that's kind of an anthropological study, or a big sort of famous STS work has someone going into the lab and studying scientists as an anthropologist would, going to like a different country or going to study a different culture, and thinking about how do we think about science and why is science considered such an infallible way of viewing the world, and the fact that we have biases and we insert ourselves into everything that we do. So science is not above that. And in what ways do we insert ourselves, or do scientists' perspectives make their way into our actual foundational knowledge of the world?
I am looking forward to whatever dissertation you write. I told this the pre-show, but I'll say it now first. In the proper show. I want to read that dissertation. I don't even know what you're going to write about in that field to get the PhD, but whatever it is, I want to read that dissertation. Like, that dissertation, yes, sounds like something to look at. All right, Aphex in chat room asks, and I'm assuming she goes, is Samus still into video games? And if so, does she have any faves or looking forward to something coming out?
Hey, so I'm like the oldest, most like not cool gamer ever. I'm looking right now at my Sega Genesis and my little box full of cartridges. So I only play like PlayStation games, and prior to that, like that's my golden age, and I just hang out there. So I haven't really updated myself. I don't really take the time to figure out what's going on.
I'm gonna have to show you some indie games. I'm gonna have to show you Shovel Knight one of these days.
Oh, yes. Shovel Knight, actually, I've heard amazing.
Oh, it's so good.
As like just one of the best games that's come out in a very long time. So
good, so good.
And I think I would appreciate that as someone who's playing these sort of retro games are now, because it's weird for me to say retro games. I'm like, oh my god, am I that old? But but yeah, I'm kind of stuck.
All right, I assume this is a question because it's from a guy called IQ. I assume it's a question because it's quite, just the way it's been. You probably have heard of this. I think I know who this is.
I think I know exactly.
He goes, how can I get you to watch Attack on Titan before you get to Florida so you can do this last track with me?
Well, considering that I'm going to Florida on Saturday, it is now Wednesday. I could try to squeeze in a few episodes.
Just watch you know what? Watch it on the plane. Maybe grab a copy. I honestly still need to watch Attack on Titan. I feel guilty not seeing that either. Yeah. It's one of those animes I'm just like, fuck, I need to watch that, because I've been hearing way too much good about it. It's just, I just need to sit down and like, ultimately, because I know it's the kind of show that I have a tendency now to watch shows that I kind of keep in the background as sort of noise, and I can kind of focus on a little bit, then get back to work. I know that's the kind of show that I need to watch and focus on it. Like give my 100% attention to, because I've heard way too much good on this. And I've heard it like way too much good on this from sources I trust. And that's always a sign for me of like, I need to just watch this. That I've heard.
Yeah, but it's hard. There's so much shit in the world. There's so much, so many albums. There's so many movies. Like, it's really difficult to get to everything. So don't beat yourself up for not being there just yet. You know, we get there when you get there.
Mech says in the chat room, it's a bit long for that, and you need at least 5 episodes to really get pulled into it. So there you go. So you got 5 episodes is what you need to do. You now have a task of watching at least 5 episodes of Attack on Titan, so that when you get to Florida and you're able to do the collaboration with IQ, it all works out, and that everything is happy.
We'll be accountability partners. I'll check. I'll check and make sure that you've been watching too.
There we go. That'll be works. Yeah. Well, I think we're out of time, Samus. We've hit the hour. We'll maybe do a little bit of after show if there's any more questions, but the show proper is done. Samus, it was amazing to have you on. I apologize for any technical difficulties that have happened, but it was still an amazing episode, and everything else. Tell people where they can find all the stuff that they want to, like, if they want to experience the amazing thing that is Samus. How can they do that? Where can they go?
Okay. This is how you can do that. So you can go to my website, which is samusmusic.com. That's SAMMUS music.com. You can find all my stuff on there. And actually, at one of my shows, this guy, he came up to me and he was like, you know, I listened to you on the way over here. And I was kind of like, but then I saw you perform and I really loved it. So, so if you want to see me, I thought that was hilarious. I was like, wow, that's very bold to say to someone's
face. I will say this. I will say in post, I do like your music recorded, but you are you definitely are a way better act live, but that's neither here nor there. Like that's not saying like that your music is like, your music's great recorded, but
Thank you. You
know, like Kiss's music is great recorded. They were amazing live, that kind of thing.
Right. But see, the way that you framed it is the way that I would have phrased it too. Like, oh, this was great, but I really liked the U live.
I wouldn't have phrased it. I'm like, look, I heard you. I was like, meh. But he came and I was like, it's like, what? Is that a compliment? How do I take that?
Right. I'm like, thanks, I guess.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you want to see me live, you can go to the little tour tab and see where I'm going to be. Or maybe, you know, shoot me a request that you want me to come to your town. Maybe I can. All my albums are up there. You can go to store and it'll shoot you right to my Bandcamp page. So I have a very little consolidated hub for you to find everything related to me. And you can find a link to all of the pictures that I used to draw as a kid. I uploaded them. So there's like, I think there's a tab that says like artwork or something like that. And you can go and see some of the characters that I used to draw.
That's awesome. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitters. You want to comment this episode? Maybe you have some thoughts on nerdcore hip hop or just music in general. Head on over to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you find links to show notes, previous episodes, and everything else in between. And of course, if you want to support this podcast monetarily, if you want to help it grow, help it become a big giant show of funness, head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/8bitlife. And if you cannot give monetarily, which I understand and I fully accept, just share this somewhere. You know, if there's a subreddit you think that this episode would be very welcomed at, a place that you think that this kind of interview would be solid and accepted at, just share that there. Put it there, link it there, and let people know about it. That's the best way you can also help the show grow. So that's it for today. Tune in next week when I talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Bye.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.